wisdom goes away.
Hi, I'm Bruce Baker. I write songs that give people with conservative values a laugh, or maybe bring a tear to their eye. Hopefully, the songs will help people with liberal values to see the light of liberty. Please visit my website at www.myspace.com/Bruce-Baker. You can hear full versions of several songs and see my video. There are links to download either iTunes or MP3 versions of the tunes on my new album, Mark's Larks. That's www.myspace.com/Bruce-Baker.
And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness of him and cried out, saying, This was he of whom I said, He who comes after me is preferred before me, for he was before me. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 14 and 15.
And here at the American Freedom Network, and I hope we'll have our scheduled guest, but he's not with us as yet. So we're going to do open lines, and we'll invite your calls here at 1-877-254-7524. 1-877-254-7524. But I thought maybe we'd just start out talking about the very real danger of an EMP attack. And as some very well-informed people who study this issue say, it's not a matter of if we're going to have an EMP attack, but when it's going to occur and whether it'll be certainly from a hostile enemy or from a solar flare. You can get them from either source. But it will have devastating effect on America as we know it. And, of course, to most people, why, of course, you don't think too much about this because the media seldom, if ever, mentions it, and that really, of course, is very significant. If certainly you were to be prepared for the possibility of an EMP attack, you'd be hearing about it every day. It's sort of like what happened at the tragedy at Sandy Hook Elementary School. I mean, we hear about that over and over and over again. They focus our mind on that tragedy. Of course, it's part of the diabolical effort to disarm the American people so we will have no protection during the very terrible and difficult times that lie ahead. And you can see the coordinated, organized effort to convince us we just have to have gun control. I don't know how many of you saw that wonderful interview with Alex Jones and Piers Morgan, but if you haven't seen it, it's well worthwhile going up on the computer and just put in certainly, Piers Morgan, Alex Jones interview, and Alex did an amazing job. Certainly, he's not going to be popular at all with the establishment, but he managed to get out a lot of excellent information on what's going on, and let Piers Morgan play all the games that he did play with Larry Pratt. So anyway, that's well worthwhile watching. But of course, basically, I use that as an example. Oh, we are being conditioned to accept the idea of confiscation or registration of our guns or controlling bullets, something of the sort. There is a conscious effort to disarm the American people. But there is no effort at all to warn us of the danger of an electromagnetic pulse attack, which would be far more devastating to America than perhaps even dropping one or two nuclear bombs on this country, because the electromagnetic attack would knock out the electronics all across America. And it's not imaginary. There was actually a 2004 congressional investigation of this, another one in 2008. Incidentally, we do have the one for 2004. You can get to Radio Liberty, and we have to charge for it. It's about 100 pages, but it's well worthwhile reading. We also have an excellent DVD, the talk that Ambassador Henry Cooper gave at our conference on October 21st of last year, talking about the very real danger of an electromagnetic pulse attack. And I will tell you that a number of people in Washington, D.C., have certainly written about this, tried to warn the American people that this would devastate our country. And within 6 to 12 months, 90% of our population would be dead, as many as 90%. And simply because we're not equipped to live without food. I mean, after all, doesn't food come from a grocery store? And the truth is it doesn't. It's got to be grown. It's got to be delivered. And what happens if it's not delivered? In our urban areas, there'd be total chaos. Not only that, we'd lose our ability for communication, or we would have difficulty getting gasoline and oil for our cars. We don't know what's going to happen to cars. Certainly this latest book, we're going to be offering it. It's written by Michael Maloff, who for many years was a senior security analyst who reported directly to the Undersecretary of Defense on security matters, including this matter. And he studied it thoroughly. He's retired now. He's a writer for WorldNet Daily. And I'd hope to have him on this program. I'm not going to be able to because of the scheduling situation, but you can go up on the internet and you can actually see my interview with Michael just last week. Michael Maloff, M-A-L-O-O-F, now working for WorldNet Daily, but formerly senior security analyst for the Defense Department. And the story that he writes about the danger of the coming electromagnetic pulse attack, and as he quotes so many experts, is saying it's not a matter of if, but when. Why? Because the Russians are working on it, the Chinese are working on it, the Iranians are working on it, the Venezuelans are working on it, the North Koreans are working on it, and others are working on it as well. They know what this will do to America, and of course, I don't believe that the Russians and Chinese are going to use this right away, but if we go to war with Iran, we have already been told by their leaders they will retaliate on America. And how could Iran possibly retaliate against America? I mean, we could reduce their nation simply to rubble. Unless, of course, they launched an EMP attack on us first. And, of course, under those circumstances, we would lose the war. And basically, of course, Iran has developed missiles, that intermediate range missiles, you can put a missile up 200 miles above our surface of our station, and if they did that and exploded a nuclear bomb there, and I'm firmly convinced Iran has a nuclear bomb, they've been working on it since the mid-1970s, and I think all this certainly is to confuse you about what's going on, and I really am concerned about the very real possibility of an EMP attack if we attack Iran. Well, we have somebody on the line. Who's calling?
This is Will Grigg.
Hi, Will Grigg. I'm so glad to have you with us this morning.
Yes.
We were going to be talking about certainly the court system, and I'm just going to let you pick this up because, of course, it's vitally important to the preservation of a free society is a dependable judicial system. The only trouble is we no longer have a dependable judicial system because America has taken God and prayer and morality out of our schools, and as a result we have a generation of lawyers who've been raised without a realization that we're answerable to God, and if we're not answerable to God, then anything goes. Go right ahead, William.
That's unfortunately the case, Dr. Stan, and one of the most poignant insights that I recall from my reading of Shakespeare.
Hold that thought. Hold the thought. We'll be back in just a moment with our good friend William Grigg right here at the American Freedom Network.
Fort Collins Radiator Shop reminds listeners the effects of child abuse are devastating. For those who survive, the pain inflicted upon them as children will often influence their entire lives. If you or someone you know needs help, contact your local authorities immediately. This message from Fort Collins Radiator Shop, 417 Jefferson Street in Fort Collins. For all your radiator repair needs, they have 47 years of experience, family owned and operated. Call 970-482-6783. That's 970-482-6783. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Phillips, founder of the Green Herb.
All of God's people have a ministry, and it's a trick of our enemy to keep God's people sick and worn out to hinder their ability to minister. We are often judgmental toward people who are addicted to booze, cigarettes, and drugs, but we at the Green Herb have found that most of God's people are unknowingly addicted to the two most addictive products in America, sugar and soda pop. If you have a sickness or disease, or if you're just tired a lot, the Green Herb has an herbal product that is formulated just for you, and it's just $15.95. Come by the Green Herb, located in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, on the I-70 Frontage Road North, 1 mile west of Kipling, or call 888-765-HERB, that's 888-765-4372, or go to our website, www.thegreenherb.com, and be sure to listen to the Green Herb Show with Linda and Dr. Cass every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KHNC.
Now this is the testimony of John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" He confessed and did not deny, but confessed, "I am not the Messiah." And they asked him, "What then? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not. Are you the prophet?" And he answered, "No." The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 19 through 21.
Well, Dr. Dan back here at the Targeted Network. Our guest this morning, William Grigg, is formerly the senior editor of the New American Magazine. He worked for a time with the Republic Magazine. Now, of course, he writes blogs. You'll find them regularly up there on the Internet, and we'll tell you a little later how to get his material. It's excellent, but it's vitally important that you certainly read his material. I think that William is certainly one of the most astute of the observers we have now, and certainly one of my favorite radio guests. We're talking this morning about the court system in America and how we must get involved and try to get our judicial system to the point where it is concerned about justice rather than expediency, and where we have the finest judges and lawyers that are available, rather than the finest judges and lawyers that money can buy. Go right ahead.
One of the things that Shakespeare teaches us in his plays that offer reflections on human nature is a very brief little observation from his play Measure for Measure, which dealt with the corruption of justice and the corruption of the judicial system. And it's a line that runs like this. I'm paraphrasing it from memory. Thieves for their robbery have license when judges steal themselves. And it was understood even in Shakespeare's day, Shakespeare being one of the great exponents of the Anglo-Saxon vision of law, liberty protected by law, it was understood even then that there is a uniquely corrupting influence that is exerted on society when judges become vessels of malambition, and when they defy the law in the favor, in the interest of power, or in the interest of their own unrighteous enrichment. And we can read about that in the Bible as well. There are parables that deal with unjust judges. This has been a perennial problem in human nature. What sets the American system apart and the British system from which the American system of law descended is this idea that everybody should be equal before the law, and that there are institutional safeguards in order to prevent this type of improper exercise of judicial power on behalf of those who are well-entrenched and politically ascendant. Unfortunately, what's happened, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, is that in recent decades, our society has abandoned the moral framework that supported the Anglo-Saxon concept of law, and it's succumbed to a doctrine called positivism. And positivism, simply put, is the idea that whatever those in power ordain is good and true and just and right and proper. And most of the people who are dressed in the robes of the judicial office, and who wield gavels, and who dispose of other people's lives, are not interested in justice. They're not even really interested in the law as such. What they're interested in doing is upholding the power of the state and the interests of those who are protected by the state. And one of the really important derelictions that we see in the judicial system right now is the all but formal discarding of trial by jury. And the jury, of course, is supposed to be independent of the judge and certainly is supposed to be antagonistic toward the prosecutor. But we have a system that is biased in favor of the prosecution and judges who see themselves not as people who are there to articulate the law and to ensure that trials run fairly and efficiently. That's supposed to be the role of judges, but rather as people who facilitate the interests of the prosecution and vindicate the claims of the state. And so one of the things that we have to do if we're going to bring about reform of the judicial system is to rehabilitate the role of the jury, both the grand jury and the petty trial jury, the petty jury. So there's a wonderful website that's got a lot of resources that are relevant to this discussion. It's called judicialreformnow.com. That's one word, judicialreformnow.com. It outlines a 10-point agenda for reforming the system. The very first thing that it touches upon is jury nullification with respect to a decision called the SPARF decision, S-P-A-R-F. Your listeners might want to Google that term, SPARF, S-P-A-R-F, or just Google jury nullification. Jury nullification is a really misunderstood principle. It's a form of interposition, and a lot of terms that we're throwing around today that might be unfamiliar to your listeners, but they're of great consequence and great relevance when we're talking about our heritage. We talk about positivism. That's a term that's of relatively recent origin. And all that means, once again, is that those in power get to do what they want to do, irrespective of what the law says, and regardless of what justice would dictate. When we talk about jury nullification, we're talking about juries that behave the way that they're supposed to under the canons of Anglo-Saxon law and under American tradition and precedent and law. The powers of the jury, quite frankly, are unlimited when it comes to making rulings based on both the facts of the case and regarding the merits of the law, which is being applied. A jury is, of course, usually instructed by the judge to rule according to the facts of the case. That's to be expected. However, what is not explained to most juries is that they also have the power, the legal power, the constitutional role, and quite frankly, the moral responsibility to rule on the propriety of the law as well. Juries can nullify, that is to say, set aside a law that is manifestly unjust, one that is unconstitutional in terms of its application in injury to the rights of the accused. So, for instance, if you're dealing with some of these recent cases, such as there was one in Montana about a year and a half ago, in which somebody who has been arrested for violating a narcotics law and faces a hugely disproportionate sentence for a trivial infraction, such as having a very negligible quantity of marijuana or methamphetamine or some other admittedly harmful substance. I mean, I'm not trying to say these substances are harmless. I'm saying is that the laws are draconian and disproportionate. There have been instances where potential jurors have been polled about their views regarding the drug war, and they have said, in so many words, we couldn't send somebody to prison for making a stupid mistake. And in at least two cases I'm aware of, one in Montana, one in Houston, the case didn't even go to trial because the potential jurors during jury selection made it pretty clear that they weren't interested in what the prosecution was trying to sell, which is the completely lunatic notion that somebody's life is improved by throwing him or her behind bars for a protracted period of time because he or she has made the mistake of ingesting a substance or possessing for ingestion a substance that would do them harm. That's jury nullification of a rather interesting variety because, once again, these juries weren't even impaneled. But there have been instances as well where juries sitting in cases of that kind have set aside the law because of the disproportionate penalties which are being inflicted for the violation of the various statutes. And that's a perfectly legitimate function of the jury. Once the jury is impaneled, they have plenary, which is to say all-encompassing and unqualified authority to rule in the case. And the judge cannot, in propriety, restrict their exercise of that power. That's true also of grand juries. Grand juries were initially to be bodies that were independent of government control. They were to be run by citizens. They could call themselves into existence, and they could deliver either an indictment or what's called a presentment. A presentment is the same thing as indictment, basically, but usually a presentment is something that originates with the grand jury itself rather than with the prosecutor. That deals not just with criminal cases. I mean, they don't merely hand down criminal indictments. They can also hand down presentments against government officials or government institutions. And there's no limit to what they can do under the law. Unfortunately, under the last 40 or 50 years, there have been efforts, largely successful efforts, by the self-appointed legal community, people who are members of the bar, prosecutors for the most part, or government-appointed panels, to rein in the role played by grand juries and to make them captive to the prosecutor. This is particularly true in federal courts. And that's something that really has detracted from how the judicial system is supposed to work as well, because the juries no longer, the grand juries, no longer act as freestanding investigative bodies that can expose government corruption and that act as an impediment on the desires and ambitions of prosecutors. All these instruments of our so-called justice system have been turned into weapons that the state uses against the citizenry rather than serving as defensive weapons on behalf of the interests of the citizens. And this inversion of how the system is supposed to work is really quite tragic and catastrophic, because the most important thing that's supposed to happen in our judicial system is that the juries are supposed to force the government to prove its case against a defendant. They are supposed to be biased, in other words, in favor of the defendant. You start with the presumption of innocence. And the whole point of due process is to provide some way of demonstrating how, or some way of forcing the state to demonstrate that it has a case, first of all, against a given defendant, and to overcome an almost prohibitive presumption of innocence on behalf of the defendant. You're supposed to be proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And, of course, reasonable doubt, the phrase reasonable doubt, is somewhat subjective. What's reasonable to one person might strike another person as perfectly irrational, but for the most part, it's assumed that people of better than average intelligence and goodwill are going to have a broadly congruent sense of what constitutes reasonable doubt. But you have to force the government to prove its case, and juries are supposed to be adversarial. Unfortunately, we have a more Soviet than American-style judicial system now, owing in large measure, Dr. Stan, to some of the things you describe regarding the moral decline of our society and the fact that people no longer believe that our rights come from a creator, because most people have been educated to believe that we're not distinctive creations of personal God, but rather we're somehow the highest mutation of an unsponsored and random process of evolution. And because we're products of unsponsored evolution, there's no reason why our standards of justice can't evolve as well. And unfortunately, they don't evolve in the direction of protecting individual rights. They evolve in the direction of vindicating the claims of what is called the community. And that's the Soviet perspective on law. The Soviet perspective on law was that the individuals have to be remolded into something that is more ideologically compatible with those who supposedly represent the interests of the collective. And this is particularly true in the federal courts, that we have this Sovietized system of justice. Now, there have been some important and encouraging developments by way of a counter-revolution, and with respect specifically to the role played by jury nullification last year in New Hampshire, there was a law enacted which formally recognizes the right of jurors. Actually, I think it's better described as the moral responsibility of jurors to exercise jury nullification, which means, once again, nothing more or less than simply behaving the way juries are supposed to behave. If you have a jury that's just a rubber stamp for the prosecutor, you have the Soviet-style model in practice, in which you didn't even have trial by jury after 1917. The Russians, between, I believe it was about 1868 and 1917, actually had a system, a reformed judicial system that was quite a bit like the Anglo-Saxon system of justice. There were juries, there were due process guarantees, the rights of the defendant were respected in law. All this happened under the Tsarist government of the late 19th century. When the communists came to power in 1917, they threw out the jury system entirely and replaced it with a system in which procurators, that is to say the prosecutors, would work in collaboration with panels composed of party officials who saw their job not as defending the rights of the accused, but of validating the rights of the party and the claims of the state. And Joseph Stalin, the hyper-murderous dictator of the Soviet Union from the late 1920s through the early 1950s, had handed down instructions that he wanted the prosecutors to achieve a 100% conviction rate. I think the highest that he got was something in the high 60%. We have, in our federal judicial system, our federal so-called justice system, a conviction rate in federal courts over 90%, which is substantially higher than the conviction rate under Joseph Stalin in the Soviet Union. And probably 97% or more of the cases that are brought against defendants in federal court generally don't even go to the point of having an actual trial and an actual verdict, because they're pleaded out by defendants who face the prospect of tens of years, decades, behind bars as prosecutors find creative ways to reconfigure charges and stack charges and multiply prison terms. And this is something that has really happened the last two or three decades under law and order conservatives.
We'll be back in a moment here with William Griggs, right here at American Freedom Network.
Delaney's Electric Incorporated and all DAS listeners, how do you show your gratitude for the sacrifices made by those serving in our military? You can show you care by sending packages to our troops while they're away. Just call your local veterans organization or type military care package into any search engine. This message is from Delaney's Electric Incorporated in Ault. For all your electrical work, call 970-834-1715. That's 970-834-1715.
I'm a small business owner who wants to get down to the business of making my business better. So yeah, this is about me. It's about my dream, my desire to grow my business, turn a bigger profit, and increase my output. And it's the reason I'm looking at these Ram trucks and commercial vehicles, and I like what I'm seeing. From the legendary Hemi to the durable and powerful Cummins Turbo Diesel, you can enjoy low cost of ownership, the industry's best warranty, and upfitter-friendly chassis. They've got on-the-job upfit allowances up to $1,500, a special $1,000 small business incentive, bringing the total savings offers up to $8,200. On top of all this, you may be able to deduct up to 100% of the purchase price as a tax deduction. But the real incentive is low cost of ownership, fuel efficiency, and durability. I'm small business. My gut says Ram. Guts, glory, Ram.
Maximum tax expense eligibility, $139,000. Consult your tax advisor. See dealer for eligibility and cash allowance details. Must take delivery by January 2nd, 2013. For more information about on-the-job savings, call 877-ON-THE-JOB or go to ramtrucks.com. Hemi and Ram are registered trademarks at Chrysler Group, LLC.
And of his fullness we have all received, and grace for grace. For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Christ. No one has seen God any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, He has declared Him. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 16.
No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque or reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. Article 1, Section 10.
Well, Dr. Stan, and here at the American Freedom Network, and it's vitally important you understand we live in a utopian society, and our traditions, the finest in the world, our Constitution, a wonderful, wonderful document that separates America from all other nations. But a lot of this is being progressively eroded. So the idea that we would have a federal government with its powers limited by the change of the Constitution has been forsaken by those who want to use the federal government to regulate every aspect of human endeavor. We have a judicial system that once was based upon God's law. We can't even mention God in our church, in our school, churches, pardon me, in our schools or in our courts today. Today in America, one in about every 103 adults is in prison. One in about every 33 adults is in prison, probation, or parole. One in 33 adults, prison, probation, or parole. Young black men, 21 to 31, one in three is in prison, probation, or parole. What's wrong with this system? Well, Chris, when you get into prison, well, they can get you to work very cheaply. We have a prison industry. We're building prisons all the time. We have private prisons of our government. Certainly, when you get into the prison, you can get a job, and you may get 60 cents an hour. And so people in prison are a good labor force for certain products that they manufacture. The average individual on the outside has no idea how this works. We have certainly in California a three strikes law, three strikes and you're in for the rest of your life. Now, certainly I think if you are a recurrent felon, why that's justified, but sometimes they'll put people in prison for life when the third crime is maybe stealing a loaf of bread or something very minor, a minor misdemeanor, and they are abusing these laws intentionally. They know what they're doing. Sydney, I believe that we need to look at the jury system. We need to look at our court system. We need to look at our prison system. And these are things you're not going to see featured on ABC, CBS, and NBC, because, of course, we're moving towards a police state, and there are people who really want to do away with freedom as we've known it here in America. William, you go right ahead.
Dr. Stan, enlarging on one of the points that you made here with respect to the prison industry, that's the largest growth sector in our economy apart from the larger homeland security state since 2001, obviously. Actually, since before 2001, the lineaments of what we now call the homeland security state were fully visible, and the sinews of this evil state were being strengthened. But after 2001, of course, the existing plans for Department of Homeland Security were put into effect. The so-called Patriot Act was enacted sight unseen. Those protocols have been written before the 9/11 event, which is one of the reasons why so many people are suspicious over the circumstances surrounding that catastrophe. But one of the things that's happened in the prison industry is that it's looked upon now as the economic recourse, a first resort for towns and counties that have no other way to replace manufacturing jobs that disappeared. I live in a small town called Payette, Idaho. It's about 8,000 people population. It's right across the Snake River from Ontario, Oregon, which is part of Malheur County, a huge and largely uninhabited stretch of Oregon that goes all the way to California and Nevada. There's a section where Idaho, Oregon, and Nevada sort of intersect. Treasure Valley is the name given to this geographic region that sort of bestrides the Snake River. The Treasure Valley has a population in the aggregate of probably about 40 or 50,000 people. There's not really a whole lot going on here economically. Most of the factories have been shut down. We had an opportunity a few months ago to have a nuclear power plant built in the region, and for political reasons, that never came to fruition. There's the Orida processing plant across the river. There's another food processing plant in Fruitland, Idaho, which is a neighboring town here to Payette. But there's really nothing else going on here that doesn't involve large-scale retail, such as Walmart or Kmart or any of these other outlets for what some people refer to as the Chinese industrial combine. And a lot of those goods are produced at the so-called Logai re-education through labor camps. China is shutting down the Logai camps that were established in 1957 under Mao Zedong, who's probably the most murderous dictator in history. Something on the order of 60 million people or more were killed by Mao Zedong as he was imposing communism on that country. And now China, for whatever reason, is reexamining the logic of consigning political dissidents and petty offenders to their prison system in order to manufacture goods that are consumed here at all but concessionary prices. But the prison system in the United States is expanding in that direction. As you point out, there are all kinds of corporations that subcontract with the prison system in order to provide various kinds of goods and services. And this is something that is advertised by these corporate quasi-private prison groups that are involved in the business of building the prison industrial complex. The reason why I elaborate a little bit upon the fact that I live here at this somewhat economically blighted area called the Treasure Valley is that the Snake River Correctional Institution, which is the outpost for the Oregon State Prison System was built about 15 years ago, and it is now the major employer in the Treasure Valley. I was reading an article from, I think it was called Oregon Business Magazine, a few days ago, talking about the fact that when they started to build the prison here in the late 1990s, there was a lot of controversy because people didn't want to make the town of Ontario or any of the other neighboring cities here sort of an economic satellite of the prison system. And now, 10, 15 years later, it's seen as the tentpole for the local economy. Many of the critics have decided either to embrace this or at least to mute their criticisms because that's what's bringing in all the money. This is, in other words, a community, if you want to use that word, that is dependent on the prison system. And that means that you have to have people being fed into the prison system, and that's one of the major sources of corruption for the judicial system. You have judges who see themselves as processors, people who are processing others into the maw of the prison system, both federal and state, as well as local. And you cannot have a functioning justice system if judges see themselves basically as part of a human intake system for the prison industry. And I mentioned in an earlier segment here that it's important for people to go to this judicialreformnow.com website, judicialreformnow.com website, to look at the 10-point program for reforming the system, beginning with the necessity of rehabilitating the practice of jury nullification. But one of the other subjects brought up in this agenda is the idea of finding ways of holding legally and civilly accountable judges who, in the exercise of their office, are perverting the interests of justice on behalf of the embedded interests of those who have battened on to the prison system, among other things. These people are largely unaccountable. These people who swaddle themselves in robes and fondle funny little hammers and generally ignore the interests of defendants. It's one of the reasons why we need to start a movement. There has to be a peaceful and largely ideological, intellectual revolution here in the direction of holding judges accountable and reasserting the authority of citizens as jurors in the system. I touched upon as well the fact that we have a system that is thoroughly Sovietized here, where we have, rather than trial by jury as we'd understand it in the history and tradition and culture and pedigree of the American and Anglo-American culture, we have a system that's more akin to the revolutionary post-1917 so-called people's courts in the Soviet Union. And those courts were composed of a judge and a panel of 2 to 6 party-appointed assessors, and they became known as nodders because they would simply nod in agreement with the judge. In other words, they would do whatever the judge would bid them to do. That's not that different from the system that we have now. We still have juries. They're called juries. We still have the forms and much of the verbiage used to describe the traditional judicial system. But it's been emptied of its content and it's been repurposed in the direction of vindicating the role of the state. By the way,
I think it's important for people to know that when you go in to become a juror, at least in the courts I've been in, they always ask you, will you agree to certainly accept what the judge tells you is the law? In other words, will you come up with a decision the judge tells you to? We'll be back in just a moment.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
The name is Patriot Trading Group, and the website is allamericangold.com. I'm Joe Jaquin, Vice President of the Patriot Trading Group, and we handle American gold for the American people because that's who we are, and that's who we care about. So if you want your portfolio to help you get the job done, or if you want your IRA to be safe from Wall Street and the paper markets and your kids' future to be protected, then call us, the Patriot Trading Group, at 800-951-0592. You'll be glad you did.
Are you prepared for the coming chaos? Whether you are planning a strategic retreat or you have one in progress, Square Root Construction would be pleased to offer our assistance. With nearly 30 years of construction experience, Square Root Construction can help with design, engineering, and permitting issues, as well as a host of general contracting services from foundation to finish work. For a limited time, we are offering exclusive discounts to the listeners of Randy's program. For a no-obligation consultation, please call Doug at 303-517-8742 or drop an email to strategicretreats@gmail.com.
Trace Margaritas in Greeley thanks all the brave men and women in the armed forces who have served our country. To those heroes back home from missions abroad, know that your dedication, selflessness, and courage are appreciated. May God bless America. This message is from Trace Margaritas, 2319 8th Avenue in Greeley. Call 970-378-6662. That's 970-378-6662. Offering a 20% discount to veterans and those who served in our armed forces.
Well, go right ahead.
Well, one of the things that we discussed in an earlier part of this program, Dr. Stan, is the conviction rate that has been achieved in federal trials. And I had said that between, 97% of the people who are hauled before a federal judge will be convicted of their offense, because juries now are behaving like the so-called nodding juries in the Soviet Union. Actually, that is a criminal understatement of the extent to which the prosecution succeeds, because of the ductile nature of federal juries to begin with, but also because of the prohibitive advantage the prosecutors have in their ability to stack charges against each other and build up a formidable potential jail sentence for a single offense against federal law. And by the way, nobody knows what federal law is. The Justice Department did a study not long ago where they were trying to assess the number of federal statutes and ordinances that exist. And, of course, and for this purpose, they defined, as if they were law, the enactments of bureaucratic agencies, which never were enacted through legislatures. In other words, they're not laws in the constitutional sense, but they're enforced as if they were laws when they're put into the Federal Register. And the Justice Department concluded that really they can't number, they cannot enumerate the laws or provide a quantity. They cannot quantify the number of laws that exist, the number of ways that each of us could be turned into a lawbreaker. But I think it's something like only one out of every 212 times does a defendant prevail in a federal court. One out of 212. And, of course, that takes into account, once again, the procedure of plea bargaining and pretrial disposition of various charges in favor of the prosecution. The idea is that once you're in front of a federal court, you're going to be found guilty of something. And Harvey Silverglate, who's a remarkably gifted exponent of legal issues, a former trial attorney, and I believe he's a constitutional law professor, published a book several years ago called Three Felonies a Day, that talks about the fact that each of us, from the time we get up until the time we go to bed at night, is going to commit at least three acts that a sufficiently ambitious federal prosecutor could describe as offenses against some federal statute or some bureaucratic enactment. And to the extent that each of us enjoys any freedom at all, it's a gift of the divine state. And it's because the state has supplanted God in the minds of the people who are administering its powers. Here's a really good example of what I'm talking about. There's a fellow from California by the name of Aaron Sandusky. It's an unfortunate surname. He's no relation to the other Sandusky. Aaron Sandusky was just sentenced to 10 years in prison because he had operated a medical marijuana dispensary that was licensed by the state of California and fully in compliance with all the laws of the state of California. But the Obama administration prosecuted him under what they are pleased to call federal laws, which are of no validity in this issue because there is no constitutional authority for the federal government to be involved in the regulation of medical marijuana, or for that matter, any other substance that would ingest. Since the repeal of the Volstead Act and the repeal of the Prohibition Amendment, the federal government has never had the constitutional authority to prohibit people from consuming anything they choose. Now, the states can do this. The states can be inclined to prohibit the consumption of marijuana or other drugs or other narcotics. A state can, under the Constitution, can impose prohibition of alcohol consumption. There are dry counties to this day throughout the United States where the distribution of alcohol at certain times is illegal, or the distribution of alcohol is illegal, period. You know, states can do this. These are part of the reserve powers that they retain under the Constitution. But the federal government, ignoring the Constitution, as it habitually does, and ignoring the laws of the state of California, prosecuted Aaron Sandusky for doing something that was perfectly legal, and now he faces 10 years in prison for doing something that was not a violation of any law he was required to obey. Now, when he was being sentenced, the federal judge, a fellow by the name of Percy Anderson, made a point of mocking and upbraiding him for being supposedly irresponsible. And what he said as he pronounced sentence was that he was going to take a stand for the rule of law. No, he didn't. He took a stand on behalf of the power of the government, which, of course, is what he's supposed to do under our Sovietized system of justice. What's really outrageous here is that the jury in this case didn't behave conscientiously, as they are required to do by law, by oath, by statute, and by morality. By throwing out this prosecution, Mr. Sandusky's business associates all accepted plea bargains that resulted in them receiving terms of probation. And so the vindictive prosecution made an example out of him by giving him this 10-year sentence. There's another case in Montana in which you have the same thing happening with a man who is operating a perfectly legal, licensed medical marijuana clinic. I'm not an advocate of marijuana consumption in any form. The point I'm making here is that the federal government does not have the authority or the moral standing to prosecute people who are obeying the laws of their state. But owing to the pervasive corruption of our system of so-called justice, and the role played by corrupt judges therein and by ambitious and criminally minded prosecutors, you have a system where people can have 10 years of their lives stolen from them for doing things that are not crimes, which is why we have to reform the judicial system. And once again, I want to direct your listeners to this website, judicialreformnow.com, to get an idea of just how extensive the problem is that we're discussing and some of the things that we can do in order to combat it and reverse what's happening.
And before we go on, please give out your website so people will know how to get in touch with you.
I appreciate that, Dr. Stan. My website is called Pro Libertate. That's two words, ProLibertate, Pro Libertate. If your listeners go to Google or some other search engine and type in Pro Libertate and my last name, Grigg, which is spelled G-R-I-G-G, that would be the first return. Just Google my name, William N., as in Norman, William N. Grigg, and Pro Libertate should be the first return. The direct address is freedominourtime.blogspot.com, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. And I do have a PayPal button at the end of every essay for those who have the means to donate and who are inclined to do so. I'd really appreciate it. This is my primary means of supporting my family. freedominourtime.blogspot.com or Pro Libertate, the blog. Just Google William N. Grigg and some variation on Pro Libertate, you should be able to find that. I also publish quite frequently at lewrockwell.com. That's lewrockwell.com. And pretty soon I'm going to be resuming my radio podcast, and I'll have more details about that on my website.
All right. God bless. Thanks very much, William. We'll talk to you real soon.
Thank you, Dr. Bye-bye. King. God bless.
Sir Optimist International of Fort Collins reminds everyone, there tends to be a severe blood supply shortage at this time of year. Roll up your sleeve and give the gift of life. Give the gift of blood. This message from Sir Optimist International of Fort Collins in Fort Collins. For information, call 970-988-0563. That's 970-988-0563. Or visit online at fortnet.org/SIFC. That's fortnet.org/SIFC.
I'm a small business owner who wants to get down to the business of making my business better. So yeah, this is about me. It's about my dream, my desire to grow my business, turn a bigger profit, and increase my output. And it's the reason I'm looking at these Ram trucks and commercial vehicles, and I like what I'm seeing. From the legendary Hemi to the durable and powerful Cummins Turbo Diesel, you can enjoy low cost of ownership, the industry's best warranty, and upfitter-friendly chassis. They've got on-the-job upfit allowances up to $1,500, a special $1,000 Small Business Incentive, bringing the total savings offers up to $8,200. On top of all this, you may be able to deduct up to 100% of the purchase price as a tax deduction. But the real incentive is low cost of ownership, fuel efficiency, and durability. I'm small business. My gut says Ram. Guts. Glory. Ram.
Maximum tax expense eligibility, $139,000. Consult your tax advisor. See dealer for eligibility and cash allowance details. Must take delivery by January 2nd, 2013. For more information about on-the-job savings, call 877-ON-THE-JOB or go to ramtrucks.com. Hemi and Ram are registered trademarks at Chrysler Group, LLC.
He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 10 through 13.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the American Freedom Network, and let's see, this is such an important subject. The website, judicialreformnow.com, judicialreformnow.com. The gentleman who has that website helps to support Radio Liberty and keep our network on across the nation. And I have William come because I think he expresses a concern about what's happening to our judicial system better than anyone I know. But I will tell you quite frankly, if you are Sunni in many parts of this country, are called for jury duty, you will be told ahead of time there will be no such thing as jury nullification. They may not say that as such, but you are simply asked if there's any reason why you will not follow the judge's specific instructions on the law and how this case should be handled. And you're not going to be allowed to determine whether the law is right or wrong. You will do what the judge tells you. And if you tell them that you believe that the purpose of the jury is to judge both the law and this case, you're not going to be allowed there. We've abandoned our whole concept of justice as traditional American justice, just as we've abandoned the limitations of our Constitution and the fact that we are a republic, not a democracy. And you will never hear any of our politicians refer to that fact. They will tell you we're a democracy. You'll be taught in schools we're a democracy. The media will tell you we're a democracy. And democracies always eventually result in dictatorship. That's exactly what the plan is today. If you don't understand what's going on, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read it, shame on you. You need to get the book, and it'll take you a couple of hours to read. It's an easy read, but it will change the way you look at the world. As many people have told me, we have close to between 50 and 100,000 copies out, probably closer to 100,000. We are offering the book. You can get a case of the books. Instead of $12.95 per book, they're only less than $2.40 a book. And, of course, if you actually get the case of Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a free DVD we put out, or a free 4-CD set we put out as a bonus for getting that case of books. If you have somebody else who can go in and get a case with you, first of all, it'll help us because we want to get the book reprinted. And, of course, secondly, it'll help you because it'll give you a means of reaching people who need to understand that we're involved not simply in a political and ideological battle, but in a spiritual battle. America was created, I believe, by God for a specific purpose. And, of course, the tragedy is there are people who hate God. That's why they take in God in prayer. And the Ten Commandments out of our school, that's not what the First Amendment says. Read it, understand. This is total perversion of what it says. Congress shall make no law respecting a religion. Oh, then if that's true, then why have they taken it out of our local schools? It's a restriction on Congress. And they knew that. And they wanted to take God out of our schools and destroy the moral fabric of our society. And we have. We have over 2 million Americans, adults in prison today. And one out of every 33 American adults is in prison, probation, or parole. And part of that is because, of course, we've destroyed the moral concepts of this society. But also, there are those who want a dictatorship in America. And those of you who don't know why one in three young black men is in prison, probation, or parole, well, you haven't heard my talk on the hidden agenda and how we're poisoning the water. and poisoning the minds of these black people with lead. Because, of course, in the areas where they have hydrofluorosilicic acid in the water supply, why the incidence of lead in the blood of black children increases 6 times, only doubles in whites, 6 times in blacks. That's my talk on the hidden agenda. The hidden agenda. The hidden agenda. My number 1-800-544-8927 for tomorrow. May the Lord be with you.
Now you can reach the American Freedom Network at our new P.O. Box, 1750 Johnstown, Colorado, 80534, or online at AmeriFree.com.
DRM Real Estate Advisors in Windsor would like to take this time to say thank you to all of the brave men and women in the armed forces who have served our country. Business owners, consider hiring veterans, our most dependable force. And to those heroes back home from missions abroad, you know that your dedication, selflessness, and courage are appreciated. May God bless America. This message is from DRM Real Estate Advisors in Windsor, reminding all of us that our freedom has never been free.
The Lord brings the counsel of the nations to nothing. He makes the plans of the peoples of no effect. The counsel of the Lord stands.